This is the 13th lecture of the 5th London ACC. I'm going to take up the skills of an auditor. Given the fact that an auditor knows his business, that he's been well trained, given the fact that the various drills which have been designed to enhance his skills have been well practiced, and that he can take them out of his automaticities and put them back again and take them out and put them back and take them out and put them back and still do them, given the fact that he can confront somebody, estimate a case, and get on with a job of auditing, all of which takes quite a while. Of course, anybody even trying to audit something is better off than nobody trying to audit anything. A lot of people, you know, stand around and they say, "What? Look at somebody else's psyche? Ooh, that's an invasion of privacy." Well, it may be an invasion of privacy, but it's damn cowardly not to, frankly. You get a lot of this invasion of privacy sort of deal. Individuals who are having a very bad time confronting somebody else may have some of this invasion of privacy. And individuals who are having trouble with their own banks have trouble auditing. And individuals who aren't well trained have trouble auditing. And individuals who are not willing to help their fellow man have trouble auditing. Almost anybody has trouble auditing, even though they're well-trained, invade privacy, and all the rest of it. Definition of a case: a rough time. All cases are rough cases. You see this dear old lady, she's walking down the street, she's carrying her reticule, a little parasol, doing fine. You'd say, well, if she ran an engram, it'd have all to do with beautiful flowers. Rape, murder, revenge, burn. You say, ugh. That's why she was such a sweet little old lady. She didn't dare be anything else. Jack the Ripper come to life a few years later, you know. And where an individual has his procedure, his auditing drills, his frame of mind, it isn't courage in an auditor, it's just guts most of the time. You can't dignify it with a delicate word like courage, you know. One's liable to sit there being noble the whole time or something like that. Just classify it under the heading of guts. The only difficulty is ladies don't have guts, I've been told. It's not polite to say so, but they've got to have them, too, if they're auditing. Willingness to sit there all night long, slug one out, you know, that sort of thing. When you get all this down, Pat, what have you got? You've got a list of things you can do. What can you do? What is the list of skills? I didn't mean any aspersion against the ladies. Matter of fact, they're some of the toughest auditors we've got. I tried to pull a girl one time off of a case. Somebody had to pull her off of me. Great big bruiser that all of a sudden turned out to be a paranoid skits or whatever they call him, you know. The world was all against him and everything was going to murder him, and so he had to murder everybody. This little auditor was about 4'8" or something like that, you know, and this guy was about 6'7". And somehow or another, in assignments, they put this little girl on this case, you know, and it just slipped. You know, there was nobody left, and the DOP was tired, and you know, that sort of thing. And all of a sudden, this little tiny girl's on this great big case. I found this out one day later, so I said, swap. She came in and gave me a piece of her mind. She said, "Don't you take me off this case. I can do something for this man. Every time he says he's going to strangle me, I say, look at that wall." Two, 3 weeks later, while he was in good shape, and she was in twice as good a shape. She was only 4'8" physically at that time, but she had somehow or other gotten 9 feet tall during the last couple, 3 weeks. Anyway, what can an auditor do? What can an auditor do once he does what he does well? Well, in the first place, to answer the question fully, we'd have to look over what can be done for man. This would be where we'd have to approach this thing. What can be done for man? And the answer to that, of course, is plenty. Many things. We have to look at what's wrong with him and where the case can be entered, the case called man. And an auditor can practically do anything in any area of that field. Some of you someday might become a specialist in robots or go around some planet processing dolls or something of the sort. But right now, it's man. Don't get the idea that it begins and ends with man. It certainly doesn't. One of these days, you'll have to get God through one of these Christian engrams he's in. But here's the whole category of help and doingness, zones, spheres, almost anything you think of in terms of man's associations and activities could be bettered by an auditor. We look at it that broadly, and we recognize that here and there somebody's been a bit short-sighted. They say, well, we can process somebody and make him well or something of the sort. How about process an organization and make it function? How about that? How about the introduction of order into any confusion? And you pretty well have the skills of an auditor categorized right there, bang. Introduction of order into confusions. Confusions can exist over the entirety of the eight dynamics. Now, if these confusions can exist over this broadest sphere, the first dynamic self, the second dynamic sex, the third dynamic groups, the fourth dynamic man, the fifth dynamic animals, the sixth dynamic physical universe, seventh dynamic the spirit, and the eighth dynamic, which is simply an infinity stood upright. We see we've pretty well taken in an interesting area. The area is not without variety. And when we say eight dynamics, introduction of order into the confusion of, we get some sort of an idea of the total scope of an auditor. Now, of course, that's an absolute, and it's unobtainable. That's an awful lot of scope. And so big that you couldn't conceive it. You say anybody say anything like that. It's got odd delusions of grandeur. Of course, somebody saying that somebody saying something like that has odd delusions of grandeur is a reverse statement of saying that the person that said it has odd delusions of inferiority. You have to look at the scope, and that is the scope. Now, we start narrowing this down to practicalities. We find some fascinating areas. And auditors have a good reality on these lesser areas. And the large area, I'd say, oh, well, no, well, sure, that looks all right as a mathematical formula. But it certainly doesn't make any sense where my activities are concerned. Running Christian engrams out of God indeed, you know. Too big. So we have to find the reality of the situation, and what do auditors in reality believe they can do? Well, anybody that calls himself an auditor has some confidence, or at least hope of, helping some individual to gain better health, better outlook, better ability, and greater freedom. Now, he has some hope of doing this. That is about the lowest entrance you have for an auditor. Not that he can do it, not that he has confidence that he can always do it, or something of this sort, but just that he has hope of doing this. Now, that's certainly on an individual basis, and you address the first dynamic in somebody else, and that is always, of course, the safe way to handle it, because thetans evidently aren't all in big glob, which somehow or other broke off from one another. They are individuals, and if you handle all the individuals, you would have the thing whip, and you get the usual program. Actually, you get, in essence, what I believe to be a sound program, too. You pick up any individual in view and put them in good shape, and you will find that the area and zone around this individual, that the area and zone, tends to calm down, become more orderly, and more confusion seems to blow off things. This person is a member of a group, and you give him some processing, and the group is a little less interbulated. And then by example, why, you can get another member of the group and disinterbulate him a bit, and you can go on through a group, and you could damp the whole thing out one way or the other. You could also process individuals as a group, but the experimental runs on this of 1950, clear back then, did not demonstrate that it had too great a value. When you started to run an engram out of a group that was a group engram, you got into some weird ideas. There were three or four members of the group who hadn't been around during the receipt of this group engram, and so usually all that happened, the engram got run into them. And it was not too successful. The most successful way of handling it was simply take the individuals of the group one right after the other and just knock out the ARC breaks, one right after the other. All of a sudden, they all would say, so what? And the group engram was blown. Now, when you take a nation, however, of 40 million or 80 million or 170 million or something like this, 200 million, that's an awful lot of single individuals. An awful lot of single individuals. And obviously, to blow a group engram out of this many single individuals would be beyond the capabilities of us. Or would it be? Would it be? Well, do nations have engrams? Weirdest thing. Once you get to know, all there is to know about engrams and how they work and how they operate and so forth, you can look back on a nation's track and you can find certain engrams. And the whole nation has a time track and it has certain engrams on the time track. Of course, every war, one way or the other, is an engram. But nations also have past deaths. You know, they rose up and flourished, and somebody caved them in, and there was a big revolution, and they turned to some other level. And you want to know what's happening in the political front, and if you read the papers very carefully, some people do. Some people actually get their information out of newspapers. I'm quite amazed the other day. Are not people still reading newspapers? Fantastic. I knew somebody the other day, though, a rare specimen. I think they had him in a glass case. He still listened to the wireless. He listened to radio news broadcasts and so on. He wanted to know what was happening nationally all the time. He was worried about the national picture. He was worried about national aspects. He was worried about nationalists and that. And I said to him, why don't you do something about it? Well, oh, nothing I could do about it. All right, well, come on now. What are you talking about? Nothing you could do about it. You mean nothing? There's absolutely nothing? Oh, well, you could put it that way. I suppose I could write a letter to the editor of a newspaper. And what else can you do about it? There's nothing you can do about it. All those people. He's been swamped by quantity, which is probably the basis of a confusion. There are so many particles going in so many different directions that Thetan says, I could not possibly track all these particles and identify all these particles, so therefore here are all these particles going in so many directions that I need not track it, there I can't keep my mind on. Oh. Better get out of here. Get the idea? You know, he says, numbers. Numbers. Numbers of particles. They used to say that 8 million angels could stand on the head of a pin. Pasteur came along later in the natural development of a religious society and said 800 trillion germs could stand on the head of a pin. I mean, I think that's natural evolution when they start arguing like that. So all of these germs, and they're so numerous, you can't, obviously can't do anything to any of them because you couldn't track them all, you see. There's nothing you could do about it. Funny part of it is you ask somebody, what can you do about a germ? And their cold gets worse and their pneumonia turns back on again and they finally just run it right on out and come up topside and decide they could do something about one germ. You know, mount machine guns, take sword, saber, something like that, get down behind a rampart and possibly then do something about one germ. It's the numerousness of them rather than the invisibility. A Thetan, who is essentially a thing of no mass, no dimension, no real finite location, and so forth, is totally capable, really, of confronting another Thetan. He's totally capable of it. And he just gets lazy and sloppy. He thinks he has to have mass in the line someplace to confront, and so you get all sorts of odd ideas. You get people listening to TV, you get all sorts of odd ideas. But this is not the most horrible thing that Thetan thinks he can do. The most horrible thing he thinks he can do is to confront a number of things, all of which have different determinisms. This, he said, well, he knows he can track one. He knows he can go along the line of one. And if you solve one without getting chopped to pieces yourself, you could generally solve two. And if you can do that without getting ripped up, why, you can solve three. Yeah, but you say, look here, on a national scene, take Russia. You can have her, by the way. Awfully cold up there. Take Russia. Take her any place you want to. And the setup, demonstrated conclusively here, is that no one auditor could tackle Russia with 200 million going at it on the basis of one Russian, then two Russians, then three Russians, then four Russians. You see, obviously, this is not possible, is it? So therefore, could not handle all these random particles known as Russians. Obviously, the thing to do is to have war. Well, it handles them fast, doesn't it? Obviously is the answer. If it handles all these random particles that fast, obviously it's the best answer. 200 million Russians. All right? Keep that figure in mind. Doing them one at a time, that's an awful lot, right? You never get finished. You'd always be hit by 199,999,999 Russians while we were processing the first one, wouldn't you? All right, so that wouldn't work, obviously. Do you know that if you doubled your money every day, you saved a penny the first day, and you doubled your money every day thereafter, do you know how much money you would have saved in 30 days? We'll work it out sometime because it'll be quite a revelation to you. And this tells us then that if we had a geometric progression working out amongst the Russians, or an arithmetic progression working by doubles, the whole works would be finished up in 30 days. You get the idea. That's too short a look, but it would work. Why? Because if you swamped up one, you'd get two. You get the idea. And it would go on out on a geometric or arithmetic progression. That's providing everybody started auditing. Truth of the matter is, you wouldn't even have to do that. You take a family and everybody's going around the bend. You take one person in the family and run the problem of the family flat on that one person. The odd part of it is the family tends to disinterbulate. And this is magic. Well, obviously, we can do something for one individual. We can do something for one individual. But equally obviously, going at one individual plus one individual plus one individual, we couldn't possibly do anything on a national scale, could we? That'd be not possible. Now, in view of the fact that you are beating the drum as an auditor for good roads and good weather, everybody's for, you know, good roads and good weather. There's nobody against good roads and good weather. Oddly enough, there's really nobody against good health and sanity and capability and so on. There are a lot of people who are so apathetic about it that they apparently are a little bit against it at first. But you don't have any vast resistance along the line. The only resistance you have along the line is the confusion that flies off as you put the order in. And you'll get this confusion. You put the order in very adroitly with a minimum of confusion and a maximum of ARC, and you find that the confusion that flies off is minimally destructive. It's very great, but it's not very destructive. And we discover that this big failure sort of look of, let's do the whole nation, you know, you, one person, that's all, just one person, and you're going to do the whole country. See, you, just all by yourself. Yeah, that's a pretty dreary look, isn't it? Well, you know, you can do a little something one way or the other for one person, right? You've at least got the hope of doing so. All right, now, when we jump the gradient up and start talking about a whole nation, well, we just kind of bog. We say, oh, that's too much. That's too much. Let's look at a shorter view. Let's look at this family. And let's look at the smallest variety of family, just husband and wife. Let's look at this one level. All right. If we thoroughly addressed this situation with CCH0, but used that part of a technique known as CCH0, called a problem of comparable magnitude 2, or invent a terminal of comparable magnitude 2, which is perfectly valid, on either the husband or the wife, and we got it run totally flat, magic, the other person disinterbulates. This is the wildest thing. They never even heard about it. They don't know about it. They've had nothing to do with it, and yet they disinterbulate. There'd been a fellow who had been fighting with his wife for so long, he thought this was his natural habitat and environment. He thought he was the genus scrapinus. He was just having a wonderful time. I mean, life was just too exciting for words. Wife come home, be a fight. He'd come home. When she was home, there'd be a fight. And he'd get up and look at her, and there'd be a fight, you know? I mean, it was pretty wild. Pretty wild. Well, she was one of the more pugnacious sorts. She ate men for breakfast every morning, according to her general attitude and so forth. Processed this fellow, and ran him on, invent a terminal of comparable magnitude to his wife, and when he got the apathy off of it, invent a problem of comparable magnitude to his problem with his wife. And actually, they have to really state a problem then in order to get that. And ran this as a technique. And ran it flat. They ran it for hours. long after he thought it was flat. It wasn't bothering him now. Wasn't much dropping. Every once in a while, he'd go boom. See? But I shifted somewhere along the line and ran a problem of comparable magnitude to just a wife. See? Not his wife. We got this one dusted off. After I ran this, his wife, for a long time, we didn't have any more charge on it. This is, by the way, the slow look. You just run it as a wife. You may do this, you may not, but if you do do it, you'll do it more rapidly. If you just run a wife, the whole distance, run the general terminal. But in this particular case, I was being very sure that we got all the personnel involved, you see, and ran problem of comparable magnitude to his wife, and a terminal comparable magnitude, then a problem of comparable magnitude to his wife, and then problem of comparable magnitude to a wife, and then a problem of comparable magnitude to himself as a husband, and then ran a problem of comparable magnitude to a husband. Boy, I got this thing so flat, all the ARC brakes were off the whole domestic track, you see, for the last umpteen billion years. You know, just beat this one to death. Just stood on its head and hit it with a shillelagh just for hours, you know. It didn't have a quiver left in it. It wasn't even a quiver. And this, by the way, problem of comparable magnitude is your permanent flattener. That's your permanent technique. You want to knock out cars that he always has problems with or something like this, then you run terminal of comparable magnitude, problem of comparable magnitude. Sometimes he is even incapable of getting a problem of comparable magnitude. You have to run this low level, and this is the lowest level of the process, a terminal of incomparable magnitude to a car. That is about the lowest level of the process. And you can run this, and it achieves a permanent and lasting result. Now, when you run, what part of that problem could you be responsible for? You're giving it a lick and a promise and a dust-off. You're not taking the guts out of the machinery and screwing it all over the floor and reassembling some nice, more acceptable object. But in this particular case, you understand, the wife and the idea of being a husband and so forth just all flattened. After I got through the shillelagh, it was in splinters. I got a steamroller and went back and forth over it with a steamroller for a long while. He got up the next morning. He was about to say something to his wife. They lived in separate rooms. About to say something to his wife, same apartment. They at least stayed together that long. And she brought his breakfast in and gave him breakfast in bed. And this put him in a horrible state of shock. She was very, very nice to him. She kissed him goodbye for work. The time I saw him, he had talked to her on the phone twice to find out if she was sick. In the many, many weeks that ensued, she never again addressed a cross word to him. But he was spooked, because he couldn't find any action he had taken that had mollified her. Now, that's pretty wild. He had not said anything to her. He had not patched up anything. Their general bones of contention, which were lying around with old gristle attached to them, were, as far as he was concerned, never cleared out of her perimeter. And yet, she never had another fight with him. He used to come around, he'd say, he had a suspicion. He'd say, Ronnie, he said, you had something to do with this. But you must have processed her, too. She acts like it. She feels much better. Boy, that's pretty wild, you know. Well, there's enough truth in it, so every once in a while you'll have somebody getting processed for somebody else. And you very often have a pre-clear sitting in the chair getting audited because his wife needs auditing or something of the sort. Well, that's carrying a little too far, but if you find that condition obtaining, why, go to terminals of comparable magnitude and problems of comparable magnitude and just beat the whole thing to death. You do find that occurring. There are people around in Scientology simply getting audited because their husbands need it, and their wives need it, and their family needs it. You can actually do something about this. You can do something about this. You run terminals, problems, comp magnitude, run it properly, run it well, good smooth auditing, and so on. Magic occurs in that wider perimeter. Now, we are already entering on just this, the second dynamic, on an unreality, as far as most of us are concerned. What goes on? And yet, look, we've got the third dynamic. Mankind, animals, physical universe, spiritual universe, and the Christian engrams that have been run into God. Now, Torquemada put in quite a few. Now, when we sail off the first dynamic and into this second dynamic, we already go into a what? You know, what's this? We can have an experience with that. We can actually handle that and get a reality on it, and many auditors have. Many auditors have a reality on it. See, they get the idea that if they straighten up one person and get the other person run out and straightened up, something then mysteriously happens to the other person. Well, just let it hang in the field of mystery. There's explanations for this, rather definite ones. You tend to stay in communication with those things which you have communicated with. That's one of the things. And if you've communicated with something and you're in bad shape, why, it tends to even itself up and bring a parallel across the line. You do influence objects. You do influence people. People can be influenced by people. There is such a thing as counter-emotion. There is such a thing as engrams grating against other people's engrams. It makes a horrible grinding sound when it does it. There's all this sort of thing, you know. But where an auditor's basic skills are concerned, he starts to leave the totality of reality when he enters in to this second dynamic, first edge of the third dynamic proposition. Of course, he'll agree with you totally if you say, well, now look, there's this big company. There's this big company, and it has a president. And the president has a wife, and the wife keeps the president just round the bend. Now, why don't you go get the wife, take up a collection amongst the employees, go get the wife and process her, and go get him and process him, and obviously you will influence the entirety of the group. Oh, that's for sure. You see, that's a cinch, because you have a visible command line from a person who is having a bad time to all these other people. You have a visible command line. This individual issuing orders in bad temper, order to him equals bad temper, you see. So, of course, if order equals bad temper, the result of his orders is a confusion. So he has a confusion, then he complains about having a confusion, and everybody's living in a confusion. You can see easily how this straightens out by processing one man. But it's a little bit harder to realize that if we took a foreman who is in charge of just one end of the tool shack, he has heavy tools, and he has a very small crew that just moves the tools around, and he gets around the organization a little bit, but what does he do? Never talks to anybody, never has anything to do with anybody. And he's just straight 1-5, right across the boards. And we don't have too much reality on taking that foreman, who isn't, of course, in charge of more than two or three men, and who isn't close to any other part of the shop, taking that foreman as part of the organization and processing him and straightening out his case and bringing an otherwise unanalyzed or unexperienced result to the rest of the organization. See? We straighten out the organization by processing the foreman. Well, we have to know that that which travels fastest is ARC. Apparently, that bad news travels fastest. Well, I assure you that bad news has to utilize roots which were planted with ARC. See? And ARC is fairly wide open as a comm line, so anything can come over our roots, you see. So a person Here's nothing if he has no ARC with anything. He's also in terrible shape, but that's beside the point. He certainly doesn't get any bad news. King's used to discourage bad news. Messenger run up and says, "Sir, we've lost the battle." King would say, "Thank you," off with his head. People kept on reporting. That's what I never could understand until I found out that people had to sometimes elect an executioner. Now they can choose an auditor. Now, here's this thing. How about processing this foreman over here and, to some degree, clearing up the rest of the plant? Yeah. It's sort of out of our realm, don't you see? We don't put a finger on that one very easily. Well, now, we could go even to a further unreality. How about taking just one man on Earth, fourth dynamic, you see, mankind. How about taking just one man on Earth and clearing him totally? Think it'd have any effect? Well, it'd have a little effect, you know? And suppose we cleared 30 or 40. Well, we might be getting someplace at a fast rate of speed. Get the idea? And probably this problem of quantity never existed in the first place. And probably the idea that a thetan can't handle quantity is probably merely itself an engram. And I think he escapes the limitations of that engram the moment that he handles one. Because it goes from not being able to handle any to at least being able to handle one, don't you see? I always tell a girl at the telephone switchboard when she's having too hard a time with calls, that sort of thing, and the board starts falling all over the place and the lines are plugged in and out and lights flashing and so forth, just handle one call. Just one call. One time I was a field executive in American Red Cross, Puerto Rico hurricane disaster. I think it was 34. And a hurricane had gone diagonally across this rather large island, most heavily populated area in the world, it was known as in those days. Whether that was true or not, it was certainly known as that in the U.S. And it looked just like a lawnmower had diagonally plowed across the island. Every tree, every dwelling, every everything was just flat. It looked like this gigantic lawnmower. Bodies were tossed about. Trees, beams, everything scattered and confused. First hit the area. There were just people in terrible condition all over the place, you know? In the ditches and across the roads and in the fields and so forth, of their little babies and old people and helpless people and sick people and well people and young men and old men. And they're just obviously, everybody was hurt. Everybody was in a state of shock. There was obviously nothing you could do about any of it. It was just too huge. There were about four nurses standing there, and they were fairly old hands at this sort of thing, but they'd never seen it spread out so dramatically. One of them said, there's just nothing can be done fast enough to save any of them. And I said, well, that may be, it may not be, but how about you getting over there and getting that little baby and bringing them up on the road? Well, she kept looking around at all these people all the time she was doing this action. She brought this little baby up on the road. It was crying, was all bruised, and evidently been blown out of its crib in a house that had collapsed right alongside of the road. And tried to wipe some of the dirt off of it and so forth. All of a sudden, its mother appeared in no place. Tried to straighten up mother a little bit and get her to come over to an area where we were putting some people there. I'd be a son of a gun if her father didn't show up. Hmm. And from that point on, why, just by concatenation, chain reaction, that whole lawnmower strip diagonally across that island just straightened up. You just took care of one. Too overwhelming to face. All right, now if we're looking at a whole world, we can look up the line to 5, 6 dynamics there. We can see that we could have some influence upon some part of each one of those dynamics to some slight degree, regardless of quantity. Regardless of quantity, we could have something to do with each part of one of the dynamics. We have a reality on this. You take one dog, he's pretty goofy. We could straighten him out so he didn't bite people. You know, you get the idea. That's fifth dynamic, you know. And on the sixth dynamic, well, there's a very random circumstance going on with some rivers and erosion and that sort of thing. And we could at least write a letter to the government and say they ought to put a dam in there to keep all the land from blowing away or something like this, you know. I mean, little things, but something could be done all the way up the line. We feel great confidence until we look at the whole universe. We read in science fiction that there are various things about various parts of the universe, and that the nearest star is an unthinkable distance away, and you would have to live 2 or 3 lifetimes in order to get there in a rowboat. And they have peculiar, outmoded, barbaric, and decadent ideas about space travel. Almost anybody who has been a good rocket jockey, who knew his business, an astronavigator, you know, and that sort of thing, some former official of the spaceographic office of the 6th galaxy or something like that, could probably set them right. I don't know why you were being quiet. But anyway, here's the fact of confronting the whole universe and saying, well, of course, it's so big, and there's so much there, and there's so many living beings in it, that we have just now passed into a total unreality. And graduating it upstairs into this, we again see that you could still have an unreality on doing anything about anything, you know. But just knowing something about it, knowing the truth of the matter, that living beings have been racketing all over this matchbox, set in a distorted illusion, physical universe, tells us that that's some distance along the line, don't you say? And you can't find, really, a single sector anyplace in any direction that an auditor would look for the application of his skill where he cannot find the first leg up, where he cannot find the first rung of the ladder. He can at least find the first rung of the ladder on any of these problems. So basically, an auditor's skill is limited first and foremost by his own reality on what is. I knew a person one time that had been raised with Christian scientists. There's nothing wrong with Christian science at all. But they certainly do say that nobody gets sick. You must think the right thought and so forth, and they do ignore illness. If they don't do anything active for it, they still ignore it, don't you see? And you know somebody could be quite ill around this person, and this person would simply go around and do the da-da-da and so on. This person could be kicking the bucket, and they'd never move one single inch out of their line. Just walking along, you know, and sailing in and out of rooms and so on. And this person lying there practically dying, you know. Person say, if they could talk, you know, and say, well, get me a glass of water or something like that. Just fall on totally deaf ears. You know, why? Why, you're not sick. It's just, you know, all in your mind and your imagination. Mind, hell, they were sick. I don't care whether it was real or unreal or anything else. Certainly somebody in that house believed he was sick and was suffering the consequences of being sick. And somebody else was saying, well, it's just all thought and there is no reality to anything. And so, of course, you can't be sick. You lose more people this way. If she'd just gotten down and practiced some Christian Science on him, been all right. Didn't even do that, don't you see? And all of a sudden, why, I realized that this person must be very ill. Well, just look at all the things this person was saying don't exist. See, well, what a terrific not-isness. Big not-isness on the whole universe. So I said, the next time I got this person, I got hold of him, I sat him down. They're going to be chatty, you know, they were kind of a social call. So I shoved him into a chair and shoved the cans in their hand, and I said, I want to check on something. And I said, tell me one thing you could do for a sick person. Well, you'd think they'd just gone through unreality, huh? A vomiting degradation turned on off this single question. I gave this person about the worst next 2 hours they had ever had in their life. Christian Science was just a handy excuse, wasn't it? Just a handy excuse. This person knew, as they knew nothing else, that they could do nothing for illness. They knew that. And the second you ask them to do anything else, flip, chuck the cookies, degrade, horror, DTs, all the rest of it. I think I was almost an hour getting the first question answered. What could you do for a sick person? Pretty weird, huh? Not a good process particularly, but it was just run to demonstrate a state of mind and to get at it and get it out of the road. And this person had as their highest reality, this is their highest reality in the whole universe, if you can think of this being a reality, was neglect of a sick person. Highest reality. But the highest real person there was a dead person. Highest reality on people, a dead person. Well, a sick person was out of reach. Gee, it's pretty wild, isn't it? Now, let's compare that to the eighth dynamic. On the address of skills of an auditor. We know we can't do anything about it. Is that right? Anyway, no, we can't do anything about it. The biggest certainty in the world is that one couldn't do anything about anything this broad, anything this unknown, anything this uncontactable. You got the idea? Well, why don't you try sometime? In trying to sum all this up, why don't you just ask yourself the question, let's see now, what could I do about God? Interesting question, isn't it? For anybody who's spent the last couple of millennia having God do things to you, it's sort of a reverse flow look. All this sums up to is this, the skills of an auditor compared to his reality of isness. And he can handle anything as an auditor. That he feels to any degree he can be at cause over. To any degree. He can do anything for anything that he can think of doing something for. And with the individual auditor, this is the limitation of his skill. His own belief of the isness of things. If he knows something is, he can do something for it, because if he knows something is, he can at least compare its factors and move slightly in that direction. See, a physical universe, you think, well, what's the lowest thing I could do for the physical universe? Just to change it or square it around or something like that. The lowest thing I could do for the physical universe would be, well, see, I could know about it. I could know its history. Well, that's certainly been an entry. I can know some of its history. Well, of course, that shapes up at once, because you're sitting on a planet. It's part of the physical universe. You can know something of its history. This becomes possible, you see. Possibility is entered upon here. Thus, the skill of an auditor is measurable only by his own concepts of what is. If you have somebody around saying, well, there's no such thing as sickness, really. It's all in people's heads. And somebody around with the engram, total unreality. They want nothing to do with an engram. And back off from the thing and so forth. And I can assure you they're not going to do anything about it. A fellow can stand right in the middle of the street and have a fire truck about to run over him. And boy, if he says that fire truck is totally unreal to him and he can't do anything about it, he won't even move out of the road. See? And where an individual is not addressing the possibility of doing this and the target of some part of some dynamic somewhere, he's being run over by every dynamic there is everywhere. Isn't that an interesting view? Now, pre-clear gets so that he can brace himself up against some part of the physical universe and so forth. He knows what he knows out of his own cognitions. He is made well. He's able to face up to things and think about things. But you're not asking a pre-clear to handle anything. You're just asking him not to be handled. You're granting him freedom. When you're making an auditor, when you're training an auditor, when you're handling auditors, you're doing something else entirely different. You're asking somebody, the first moment that they make the faintest direction toward helping, altering, changing, or improving anything, to walk along a road which ends with running engrams out of God. You got the idea? You're asking him now to do something about or for or to handle or control something all the way up the line to doing everything everywhere. Is that the idea? At least getting the possibility of doing everything. Therefore, you have skill being available, a person being willing to exert skill as an auditor, to the degree that they can conceive of the existence of things over which there is some slightest possibility of someday in some part being cause. Now, what does that take in? Oh, that would be a long list. In fact, that'd be a list as long as the whole world is wide, written in tiny script. Long list. And every once in a while, as an auditor, you feel apathetic. You feel you're not getting on with it. Well, don't think it's so unnatural, because you're walking a ladder that goes up through eight dynamics all the way. And as your perimeter broadens, as your idea of realities broaden, each level somewhere you're going to hit the degradation of the moment when you decided you couldn't do anything about it in the past. And that's going to re-stimulate to some slight degree here and there. So just don't worry about it. For heaven's sakes, understand it. And realize that the skill of an auditor also contains the skill of handling his own reactions. And when he even knows what his own reactions will be in trying to tackle something that can't possibly be handled, why, he can handle that too. So I guess the gate's wide open and the world is yours. Thank you.